Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
For listeners that are maybe weren't tuned in last night or are unfamiliar, what is Sharia? You hear it thrown around a lot.
The literal translation is the well-worn path to water. That's what the literal translation is.
Okay.
But the Sharia is, well, you have four main schools in the Sunni thought. And each of them have different opinions on multiple issues. There are five foundations, and they're called the Maqasid, and that is that law must protect or give you the right to protect life, you know, your person, religious liberty, nothing that between should come between you and the divine, family, life, religion, family, private property.
Okay.
And intellect. That was the other one that I was forgetting. The intellect, the ability to think and reason.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason, the reason why you can't have alcohol is because it affects the ability to think and reason.
I see.
And that's the basics of it. It's a legal system that specifically states that it's meant for me
as a Muslim,
and not for you as a non-Muslim.
There's a lot of misunderstandings about Sharia, and it has to do with people who don't want to learn anything, who just want to hate, and who get on, you know, talk shows and get on talking head shows on television and, you know, spout off like they know something about Sharia, but they don't. Maybe they what they think they know is that there are some governments in the world who claim to be Sharia law
and that's what
and
you
want
have
to
on
enforce
the
themselves on others.
Well, that's what you have on the other end that kind of feeds all of this ignorance is the fact that you have government endorsed scholars, quote unquote. You know, you have these government endorsed religious leaders who make these public statements and support these kind of things because, well, their governments carry these things out. So, of course, the religious scholars that are getting their paycheck from the government are like, yes, this is a great thing. But then when you look at other, like, if you look at religious scholars who live here in the U.S., who are, even if they're educated overseas, when they come back here, they're like, yeah, what they're doing over there is insane. And here are the reasons why, according to the texts.
I just looking up the article, I guess, mistrial with the Bundy case. Huh?
Really?
Yeah, they declared a mistrial today.
Interesting.
I was just starting to read it, sitting here on hold, and I guess they may even have let Ammon out already.
Wow! So, let somebody out on a mistrial? Yeah. That's unusual.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I just opened up the article, but it was declared a mistrial today.
Huh? And I think that John in Nevada, who's been following that case very closely and has called in about it several times, we're talking about the Bundy standoff case from back in 2014 that happened out in Nevada, where it was the Bureau of Land Management versus a family who they had a disagreement about grazing rights, and it came to a literal standoff. He had predicted that they were going to throw the case out this week.
There was a lot of
predicted with prejudice, so it's not quite as good as he predicted. But
there's a lot of info about the trial that demonstrates the government was really, really trying to stack things against
them. In fact, there was an agent who came out and basically tattled on the government and how bad they were behaving behind the scenes.
Basically, it Christian courts and Christian leaders and Christian, you know, economies and Christian markets and Jewish courts and Jewish leaders and Jewish markets and Muslim courts and Muslim leaders and Muslim markets and pagan courts and pagan leaders and pagan markets. And they all lived together in the city, in the walls of one city, and they all had contracts. I mean, we would call them treaties, but they all had contracts between each of these groups that said, look, we won't aggress against you.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone outside of our walls tries to harm you, I will defend you. And in return, you do the same for me. If anybody tries to hurt you, I'll defend you. We'll come strapped up and ready to roll. And you have scholars throughout Islamic history that actually state that over and over again. Ibn Hazm, about 200 years after the death of the prophet. And then again, al-Qaddafi, one of the most renowned Maliki scholars, Maliki is a Sunni school of Islam. One of the most renowned Maliki scholars, Shihab al-Din al-Qaddafi, in the 13th century, saying the same thing, that if someone attacks your Christian neighbor with force to harm them, if you don't come literally willing to die to defend them and their rights, then you are violating an oath given by Muhammad.
I'm on a Discord server, basically, that's all about politics and things like
now,
that.
Now, Discord is where people just have an open chat room, right?
Yeah. And
Discord is awesome.
Like an audio chat where people just talk.
Yeah, that's where I text chat as well.
I sit and chat with cryptocurrency developers all day while
I'm
working.
How many people are in these Discord rooms?
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, this one I'm in has like over 1,000
right
now. Yeah,
it's growing fast.
How does that even... I mean, I've never actually... I downloaded
the
software, but I never
individual servers, as far as I know. Each chat room.
But how do you
servers.
Have 1,000 people? Like, I've been in a text chat where there have been more than a couple dozen, and it's too hard to watch. So how do you do it in 1,000?
Each server has different rooms. Like, there's casual, religion.
Oh, so you're saying
politics.
1,000 people aren't in the same room?
Yeah, I know that would get too serious.
How many people are in a room typically?
Okay, so like if I go to Vertcoin, right? I can go in general, where there's like maybe a dozen people, or I can go in the Vertcoin traders room, which is specifically about talking about trading in Vertcoin.
I see.
And that usually has like 20 people at the very least, maybe up to 100 people, depending on the time of day and what's going on in the market. Then there's another room called trading altcoins. And there's, again, between 20 and 100 people in that room, depending on the market, and they're talking about, you know, Verge and Aurora Coin and like all these like obscure coins that I trade in. Sharia isn't about punitive punishment; it's about making the victim whole again. It's about
So what you're saying is,
say I stole all of your computer equipment here, mm-hmm. right? And I got caught, and I went to court in. The Maliki school, if I gave it back to you after I was convicted, that's the end of it. I'm convicted, but I gave you back your property. Okay, that's the end of it.
What if the property's damaged? What if
for qisas. You can say, okay, well, this has been damaged, so you still owe me up to this point.
Or what if that was, you know, you took the servers out of this room, I couldn't run the network, and there's some amount of damage. Not, you know,
same
maybe
thing.
If you return them in
any,
pristine condition, but
any
I couldn't
damage,
use them.
Any damage to the person or property of another would have to be accounted for. Yeah, you would have to
pay for that. Of you losing the equipment side, for instance, losing advertisers.
So
losing,
full restitution.
Yeah. Full restitution.
So what you're saying is this is a very libertarian
Well, it's
system.
A legal system that's built around making the person who was wronged whole.
What's the conflict? Is there a conflict? Is it sort of the same old, the governments hate Bitcoin, the banks hate Bitcoin in Islam? I mean, what's...
Pretty much.
What do you want to share?
I mean, it's literally a metaphor for what we see everywhere else and how similar, you know, society to society things are. You have the head of the religious authority of Turkey coming out and declaring Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, ICOs, the whole thing, everything involved in the cryptography community is haram.
Haram meaning?
Forbidden. Totally forbidden to Muslims, period.
Meaning God forbade
under
this.
What basis?
Basically, yeah. Well, on the basis that
he said so.
No government has no ability to control or back it. So
but that's not based on anything that God would have said.
Well, actually, like that was one of the arguments that I immediately made was, look, where is that in the Maqasid? Because the Maqasid states that like it has to protect one of these things for a law to be valid. So wherein that is government? Like when did we add a sixth Maqasid? Like I know al-Qaddafi tried to add a sixth Maqasid in the 14th century when he stated that the protection of human dignity. You know, he was kind of a social justice warrior, in you know, like long before those things really existed. Mm-hmm. But he didn't say, well, because the state doesn't like it. Like, that's never been a basis for law. Scholars in Malaysia and Qatar are skeptical. Some declare it outright haram due to its intangibility, volatility, non-convertibility. And there are no shortage of opinions from Google sheikhs. You know, like, just Google up Sharia and cryptocurrency, and you can find 1,001 of these like Yahoo imams giving their opinion, and like you don't even know who they are. Like they're just some anonymous imam with God that are, it's God knows who it is, you know, like Islam Q&A kind of stuff. Says many scholars are comfortable with treating a cryptocurrency as being on par with fiat currency notes and coins. Those include IslamWeb.net, fatwa number 251,170, and 11,074. So, like, they've been talking about cryptocurrencies for a long time. I introduced them to the topic, and Davi introduced them to the topic like 5-6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this has been a conversation, and Davi and I have kind of tried to lead this conversation, but, you know, because I'm not at that level yet, people will come to me for opinions, but they don't really, like, they're not going to publish my opinion anymore.
Sure. We were going to tell you about Eric Finman. He was, back in 2011, given $1,000 in cash from his grandmother. I don't know if it was a birthday present or what it was, but he was pretty young back then, because right now Eric is only 18 years old, according to Cointelegraph.com.
I love his grandma.
I bet he does, too. The price that he paid, he paid with her money, was $12 per Bitcoin. Right now, a Bitcoin is worth over $16,500 per Bitcoin. So quite the increase there for young Mr. Finman.
All my grandma ever gave me was $5 and an ugly sweater.
So if he had paid $12 per Bitcoin with $1,000, he would have gotten 83.33 Bitcoin. And right now at over $16,500, that is a cool $1.3 million for Eric Finman. So not too shabby for a $1,000 investment. And his early investments helped him win a bet that he had with his parents that if he became a millionaire before he turned 18, he could opt out of going to college.
Nice.
I was just reading the blog post from the Kraken Exchange, which is one of the bigger exchanges out there. It's a European-based exchange, but they have a domestic arm in the United States, so they're fairly popular here. And their site has basically been unusable for the last 2 months, and it's gotten even worse in the last month. And they've got a blog post up that they made 5 days ago, basically acknowledging, yeah, sorry, you basically can't use our website right now. And if you do use our website, you should expect that it's going to be effed up. So We're sorry about that. We've got 50,000 new users every day in the last several days.
Is it functioned up or...
It's whatever you want it to be. But they have 50,000 new users every single day, 10,000 new support requests every single day. Will, you and I, we've had support requests in for like a solid month, basically, on this website because we've got trading accounts there.
Well, Coinbase finally got back to me.
Oh, really?
They want after the 2 month wait, they want me to send them more paperwork.
More paperwork. Yeah, it's bad, man. And Coinbase, I heard through the rumor mill, Coinbase was getting 100,000 signups per day.
Tons.
I saw the CEO of Bitstamp, which is the largest, I believe, exchange in the UK. I believe he said they were getting 100,000 signups per day. Our Thursday night co-host, Chris Reitman, he actually runs a little shop here in Keene, New Hampshire, which sells Bitcoin private keys as Christmas gifts, as stocking stuffers. So this is actually happening in Keene. I was in there the other day working with a Bitcoin vending machine that we have on site, and there was an older lady who came in, and she bought three $25 Bitcoin private keys that she intended to give to, like, you
nice.
Know, children and grandchildren.
Yeah, I bet Finman has a lot of girls asking him for Christmas presents.
If not before, they certainly do now if they've been reading Cointelegraph. So it's a good idea, but what we ended up getting into was this sort of discussion about why it's hard to buy $25 worth of Bitcoin these days. Because if you buy $25 worth of Bitcoin, get ready to pay $30 in fees in order to have the privilege of receiving the Bitcoin. Our Thursday night co-host, Chris Reitman, he actually runs a little shop here in Keene, New Hampshire, which sells Bitcoin private keys as Christmas gifts, as stocking stuffers. So this is actually happening in Keene. I was in there the other day working with a Bitcoin vending machine that we have on site, and there was an older lady who came in, and she bought three $25 Bitcoin private keys that she intended to give to, like, you know, nice. Children and grandchildren.
Yeah, I bet Finman has a lot of girls asking him for Christmas presents.
If not before, they certainly do now if they've been reading Cointelegraph. So it's a good idea. But what we ended up getting into was this sort of discussion about why it's hard to buy $25 worth of Bitcoin these days. Because if you buy $25 worth of Bitcoin, get ready to pay $30 in fees yes. in order to have the privilege of receiving the Bitcoin. Because the person who's selling you $25 worth of Bitcoin, the person or the machine or whatever it is that's selling it to you, they have to pay a fee to send it to you. Because the way Bitcoin works, there are fees. And they used to be very, very low. It used to be like 2 cents. And that would have been a high fee.
There's a definite linkage between Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin because it's so easy for the same miners to just swap between one or the other because it's such a similar algorithm.
And generally, they're going to go with the one that's the most profitable.
But, absolutely.
But the thing is, it's been vacillating between which one's the most profitable.
Yes.
So one day, Bitcoin Core is more profitable. The next day, Bitcoin Cash is more profitable.
And that drives both the price and the hashing power goes back and forth. And so,
well, and then as you pointed out, you had the announcement from Coinbase yesterday where it became official that they added Bitcoin Cash to their website, which caught a lot of people off guard because they were figuring, oh, Coinbase, you're going to take forever. At the very least, it's going to be, you know, springtime 2018.
Yeah, they were saying January. And then last night I was at a Block Talk conference in New York City, and they were on stage. And
Coinbase was?
Coinbase, not Coinbase, but Miko Matsumura was on stage. He's like, why is Bitcoin Cash going crazy, and I don't understand it. And I step up and says, because it just went on Coinbase, and everybody's like, everybody's laptop comes out.
Yeah, I wanted to know if it was true as well.
No, bye.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy. So, I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
I'm in Las Vegas for the Bundy trial, and the big development today is that it was declared a mistrial for prosecutorial misconduct.
Wow, so you were right in your prediction. We had a guy call earlier to mention that it was a mistrial. You had predicted that the case would be thrown out. I think you predicted with prejudice, which isn't quite what happened. But regardless, this is going to obviously make the prosecution have to rethink its approach if they want to even try again, which I presume they will because it's the federal government and it's not like it's any skin off their back.
Now, who was in this case? Was this just Ammon Bundy or who?
Now this is the biggest case. It's with Cliven Bundy, Ammon Bundy, Ryan Bundy, and Ryan Payne. Also, Pete Santilli was originally in the slate of defendants, but fled out to time served.
Pete Santilli was an independent journalist that was on the ground at the time when this Bundy conflict was going on between the Bureau of Land Management and the Bundy family that had been. They raised cattle, and they had a disagreement with the BLM about cattle grazing rights, and that's ultimately what led to this standoff. These folks had had enough of being pushed around by the BLM, and we've seen juries being pretty kind to the Bundys and their associates in both the situation in Nevada and also out in the Malheur Federal Wildlife Refuge, which some of the Bundys' sons were involved with that standoff back in, I think it was early 2016 or 2015. I heard about this financial dominatrix thing for the first time this year. And I was so amused by this because we've all heard of, like, cam girls, right? Like the women who take off their clothes, presumably for mostly men, male viewers on websites and get paid in various different ways.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, of course, you don't have any idea. you know, we've heard about girls like that, but financial dominatrix is taking this to a totally new level. Here's the story. As Bitcoin climbs to record values, many people are wishing they'd invested in the currency sooner, while dozens of men who did buy it are giving it to a woman they've never met. The woman who calls herself Theodora is a financial dominatrix, which means that clients, many of whom never meet her in person, derive sexual pleasure from giving her gifts and money. Exchanges of money can range from several dollars in tributes, as they are called, to gifts of more than six figures. Some clients even become a human ATM for her, meaning that they give her complete control over their bank account. She's got like 20 to 25 big spenders who might donate as high as $100,000 at once, some of whom she does real-time sessions with in person, as well as 200 to 300 more who make smaller contributions online, most of whom never meet her in person. She communicates with them mostly online and by phone. She does charge $25 per minute to call her and be ignored. So she doesn't actually talk to you. She just puts you on hold or whatever, or puts you on the speakerphone as she sits there and takes more money from other guys, right? She's chatting online. You're sitting on the line just talk, you know, because you're some lonely guy. You're talking, probably, imagine, because that's what the phone sex operators do. They want you to stay on the line as long as possible. They don't want the person to get off, literally and figuratively. They want that person to kind of get strung along with conversation. In this case, she doesn't even talk to them. Oh, and she'll charge you $69 a minute if you want to actually speak to her, like receive words back from her. $69 a minute for that. But you can pay $25 a minute just to sit on an open line with her. I mean, it's almost unbelievable that this works, that this is actually a business for somebody. But it's true. This isn't the only person. This isn't the first time I've heard of financial dominatrixes. Go ahead.
I've heard of similar things. I hear that it's something that's very common with Filipino women are doing that with a lot of American men.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you want to share how you feel about, you know, Bitcoin Core versus Bitcoin Cash? Do you have an opinion on that?
I prefer Bitcoin Cash just solely because the block size, and I think it has a better philosophy behind it. It seems like Bitcoin Core is going in the wrong direction. And as you've mentioned, it seems broken, so if they don't fix it, I don't think long-term it has much viability.
Yeah.
I've heard people, even educated people, describe it as a store of wealth, whereas other currencies would be transfers of wealth, I think is the terminology they use. And to me, that doesn't make any sense why you'd store. If you had the choice, I would always prefer to store my wealth somewhere where it was easily transferable.
Right. And that's one of the, I think, the concerns for a lot of people with Bitcoin these days is they're worried that if they try to get out, that they won't be able to, because when there's a rush for the exits, the fees will escalate even more than they already are. And right now you're looking at over a $30 median fee right now to send your typical Bitcoin transaction. If all of a sudden there's a big crash in the price and people are trying to sell, you're not going to be able to get on Coinbase.
That will just finally force Core maybe to fork it and allow some scaling to be implemented.
Could be, but unfortunately it might be a little too late for them at that point. Quote, there are many people who feel it's an exploitative relationship, but ask most submissives if it's exploitative, and they will say it's not. They are willingly engaging in this. She added that sex workers switching to Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies for payment is just the natural progression of the field, noting that the sex industry often drives innovation. Think porn films and the evolution from the VCR to streaming. Cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology, she said, will find its way into our economy anyway, and this is just one avenue. Quote,
this is how you keep Jerry Springer from accidentally paying a hooker with a check.
Was that a thing? Did that happen?
That actually happened, wow. Yes.
I missed that one. Theodora claims to be the first dominatrix to create a hive of crypto followers, but she said many women are now attempting to follow in her footsteps. I bet they are. MarketWatch spoke with the unlikely crypto investor on how she pays her bills and what she thinks about the future of crypto. Question to Theodora, how long have you been working as a financial dominatrix? She says it's been around 8 years, but my online presence is quite recent. I was doing really well with a very niche clientele, but now I have the ability to make it more mainstream. Thanks to social media, I can reach people who wouldn't previously dare to delve into financial domination, but now they can try it to some extent.
Oh my God, how many Bitcoin millionaires do we know that are like getting freaky on the low with this chick?
Here's her update from her. She's got a Twitter at the only Theodora. New, join my crypto slave farm. Want to serve me financially but can't afford exorbitant tributes? And then she's got a website where you can go and get yourself set up to mine cryptocurrency for
her. So she's like a dominatrix, but they took all the fun stuff out.
I hope. It's off to work we go.
What other kinds
Why not just get married? You know, I mean, if I want to spend money and not get laid.
What other kinds of cryptocurrencies do you own? She says, I have 7 or 8 different currencies. I like, I see it a bit like play money and try to adjust to which is growing the most. If you anticipate growth, that's where it will become interesting. Everyone's now interested in Bitcoin because the growth has become exponential, and soon it will be too high for individuals to invest in, so you have to invest in others. I think it's smart, she says, to have diverse portfolios of currency.
We're going to do like, you know, call in political talk for a couple of hours. Mm-hmm. But in the middle of the day, we're going to have a crypto hour. It's going to be brought to you by the BitPlus Network. And we're going to devote that hour every day. We're going to have a guest on from somewhere in the cryptography community. It could be somebody who's working on new security software. It could be somebody that's working on hardware wallets. It could be, mm-hmm. I mean, you name it. Whatever weird little coin you're into, we're probably going to have one of their developers or promotional team on. We're also going to be giving away free currencies.
Are you just going to be pimping these coins, or are you going to ask tough questions?
Oh, we're going to be asking tough questions. We actually have my co-host is the founder of CryptoCurrencyCheck.org, which is an inside the community, basically like a rating system, like a Yelp. For ICOs, cryptocurrencies. And the idea is, because you have such a huge influx of new investors in the crypto community, you're going to have, when there are these scams, you're going to have calls for government regulation. So what Aria's idea is why don't we regulate ourselves as a cryptocurrency community? Why don't we volunteer-based within the community find a way to rate these coins, warn one another about these scams and stuff when we find them?
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.